This episode of Audiophiles contains some racy humor and scatological references. Listener discretion advised.
From the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism, this is Audiophiles. I'm your host, Alex Eidman. On today's show, we're sacrificing a live goat. Just kidding. Our program today is all about comedy. We're asking New Yorkers what makes them laugh.
Fart noises. Fart noises. Still.
Yep. They never get old. My friends.
See how that works? She makes me laugh.
We'll try to make you laugh as we dive into the wacky world of puns.
The topic for this round is going to be fabrics, or what's your sweater made out of?
It's an honor to be up here with this distinguished flannel. I just hope that I can keep you all in stitches tonight.
And for a live musical guest, today we've got the Reformed Whores. You're just going to have to stay tuned to hear what they're about. We're starting off today at the She-Devils Comedy Festival in New York, the city's only competition for female stand-up comics. Our reporter Emily Field followed 60 comedians who came for the opportunity to not be the only woman on stage.
It's the last night of the She-Devils Comedy Festival in Queens, and the competition has been fierce. The country's finest are all here, vying for their right to be called the funniest woman in New York City.
I look at couples like guys look at cars. I do. I mean, like, oh, man, that is nice right there. Woo. That's a classic. That's what I want. That right there. That's what I want. Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to get that in black.
That's Pat Brown. She's a Brooklynite comedian by way of Georgia, and she's made it to the top four. She wants to win tonight, but she's also here to help promote women comics everywhere.
The fortunate thing about men comics, they always can learn from each other. They pull each other along, but it's not that way with women because we don't have opportunities to pull other women up because we're not in those positions.
That's a big part of the She-Devil Comedy Festival. It was founded by Stephen Hofstetter and Scott Sharp, owners of the Laughing Devil Comedy Club. Sharp says the event started as a once-a-month ladies' night.
People want to see female comics, because if you go to a normal comedy show, you might see, 20 minutes of female comedy, 30 minutes?
These all-women shows sold out fast, so Hofstetter and Sharp decided they needed more. A lot more. And the She-Devil Comedy Festival was born. Tonight, the response from the women in the audience is enthusiastic.
Thing, I was just here a few weeks ago and saw pretty much an all-male show, and these women were actually a lot funnier.
Women aren't the only ones who can relate. She-Devil has packed the house. Tickets for the final event sold out way in advance. The vibe is fun, and there are lots of laughs.
The other day, I was walking with one of my girlfriends, right? And I overheard, we passed these group of guys walking, and I overheard one of them saying, he was like, that one's an 8. She's a 9. And I was like, dude, I can hear you. And he looked at me and he said, now you're a 4.
But even though tonight's event is a big hit, there's still that old stereotype lurking that women just aren't as funny as guys. Professor Peter McGraw studies comedy at the University of Colorado Boulder and has written about it in his upcoming book, The Humor Code.
There is this belief that women are not as funny. You know, that stands in the way of women's entry into the profession, in part because they have to overcome that.
This is a scenario that's playing out both in comedy clubs and on television. And McGraw says it could be bad for business.
When it comes to television, right? There are just as many female viewers as there are male viewers. And, by the way, oftentimes those female viewers have a lot of buying power in the household, that the people who are putting up these barriers are actually hurting themselves.
The ladies of the She-Devil Comedy Festival are all too familiar with this issue, and they're working hard to prove the stereotype wrong. Del Harrison is a Brooklyn comic and one of tonight's contenders.
And there are so many funny females, you know, which knocks the myth out. You know, some people be like, well, there are no funny females. That's you can see here tonight, that's just, like, not true.
Over four rounds of shows, comedians were judged in four categories: originality, writing, stage presence, and performance.
But now, for the winners.
The comedians are huddled in the dark corner of the bar as results come out. When winners' names are called, they weave their way down the narrow corridor to claim the applause that is their due. Finally, it comes time to announce first place.
And I am not surprised to see this lady taking the top spot. Tonight, twice, back to back, Miss Pat Brown!
Brown stomps and cheers when her name is called. She's not the only one. But the prize is bittersweet. She's happy to have won, but sad that after so many years of doing stand-up, she doesn't have more to show for it.
I've been doing comedy forever, as long as the Members Only jacket's been out. I feel almost embarrassed by it because I'm not rich yet. I'm making about the same amount of money if I would be a paper boy.
Rain Pryor, daughter of famed comedian Richard Pryor, headlined the event. She says money isn't the point.
It's a festival. You know, win in front of the audience each night. Get that laugh each night. That's what matters.
From Queens, New York, I'm Emily Field.
Take it from me. Women are funny, we can all agree. Carol Burnett, Lucille Ball. No, we're not gonna do it. It's beneath us all, cause we don't need to prove it to you. No, we don't need to prove it to you.
Thank you, doctor.
Don't thank me, thank Roe v. Wade.
No, we don't need to prove it. Oh, I didn't see that coming. No, we don't need to.
You're listening to Audiophiles. I'm your host, Alex Eidman. Today, we're getting our yucks out.
And now for something completely different.
If you're a regular follower of Audiophiles, first of all, thank you. Second, you probably know we've been airing a series of episodes called City in Demand about the big social issues facing New Yorkers today. This week, that episode will be available on our website, audiophiles.com. It's about what it's like to live undocumented in New York. Check it out. Now, back to the funny.
When I say Congress, you say boo!
Boo!
When I say Tony, you say yay!
Boo!
What you just heard is a vine from internet-famous Tony Oswald, with the help of a surly subway crowd. For those of you who don't know Vine, it's a video app that was bought by Twitter last year and now boasts over 40 million users. It's similar to Twitter, except instead of limited characters, you have precious seconds to make people think or just make them laugh.
Oh, hell yeah, mermaid pimps! Give me your seashell bras and take me to your majestic land!
That's Anthony Cellino confessing his love to a group of sea lions. He's Vine famous, too. You can find him under the moniker Chill Rhino.
Wanda, did you use the last of my shampoo? Because I really need it!
And let's not forget Stacey Nightmare, the funniest crustacean in show business, confronting a giant cockroach on her floor. These intrepid viners are here in the studio to talk about how comedians with no previous street cred are getting famous, all thanks to their hilarious short comedy bursts. Tony Oswald, Anthony Cellino, Stacey Nightmare, welcome to Audiophiles.
Thank you.
Hi.
Thanks very much.
So, Tony, I want to start with you. Can you just tell us a little bit about how you got started on Vine?
Right. I got started on Vine because I fancied myself a funny guy, but no one had ever told me that I was funny. So I just tried to test the waters and just started messing around, joking a little bit.
And how did you actually develop the kind of comedy that you now sort of – maybe talk a little bit about the kind of comedy that you're putting out on Vine?
It was a slow evolution. I mean, through just like watching Vines, I watched James Urbaniak in the beginning. He was one of my favorite Viners, and he was like telling these short little stories and always nailing the punchlines. And you just kind of learn through watching the format and the medium and what makes it special and like how to tell a joke, I guess. And that's how it slowly evolved.
Anthony, so building off that, what does make this medium special? It's obviously a really short time to get a joke at, and it's video. Tell us, walk us through what actually makes a successful Vine.
I think what makes what makes the most successful Vine is something that can hypnotize a person. Because the medium that it is, it's not necessarily a film where it's just a video and it stops and that's it. It's 6 seconds. It loops. It all sort of works together. And I think if you can get something that's just so mesmerizing that people end up staring at it for a couple minutes sometimes, that it just, you know, it draws the user in and it sort of messes with their brain in a way.
Stacey,
yeah.
How are you?
I'm good.
So good. For everybody out there, Stacey is a half crab, half human. Is that correct?
Yeah. I'm technically what is known as a sewer witch.
Interesting. I don't think a lot of people would think sewer witch is half crab, half human.
Well, it's where I live. It's my species. It's not just my species. It's my job.
And this character was born before Vine, correct?
I do not understand what you mean by character.
I'm so sorry, Stacey.
But I have been performing in New York City for a number of years. Yes, yeah, since I crawled out of the sea.
Oh, wow. When was that?
That was 99, I believe.
And what makes a great find for you in terms of how did you actually – why did you think that Stacey Nightmare could actually make it on Vine?
Well, you know, I think I'm a funny person, putting that in quotes. And I don't know. I just I thought it was short enough so people wouldn't throw the phone away in fear, you know, when they saw me. And I figured it was a good vehicle until I get my own TV show. Contact me.
And when do you think that's happening?
Very soon. Very soon. Maybe today.
Great. Well, if we can do anything to help that, absolutely.
I'm going to hold you to that.
Oh, please do.
I'm going to hold you forever.
Now, Tony, aside from your Tony Oswald Vine account, you actually have some other Vine accounts. Can you tell us a little bit about them?
Yeah, I've got an account called Tony B-Sides, which is much drier comedy account. It's more maybe dramatic and film-oriented, I think, building a long-term character.
Now, how does that work in six-second pieces? Can you, like, walk us through that a little bit about exactly how you – because it's like little sort of – little film bits.
Right. It's oriented around small moments that are cumulative in nature, I feel, anyway. That's like – not to over-intellectualize, but it's definitely less oriented around like impactful one-off vines and more oriented around following this person on a horrible journey of clumsiness and nudity.
So this sort of goes beyond comedy. I guess sort of the question I'm getting at, and maybe Anthony, you can take this, is – because we're still in the early stages of Vine. It's not even a year old yet. And obviously a lot of the people – well, you guys are all comedians on Vine. But do you see this medium extending beyond comedy?
Absolutely. There's some people that are doing some really incredible things that aren't necessarily just comedy. I think everybody talks about comedy because it's easy to see. And when you see that, it's shareable. But there's some amazing people that are doing incredible things. There's a guy called Matt Swinsky that does amazing horror Vines. He has a character called Laser. And he just has these little six-second snippets that are just so creepy and frightening. He did a lot of amazing stuff for Halloween, and it's just amazing to see what they can do quickly, because obviously you can do like those quick frightening things where it's just you're looking at a stale image, and then all of a sudden it switches to like a creepy old lady that's screaming at you and, you know, get kind of a jump scare. But what he's doing has such like a powerful mood to it. It just instills this fear of dread and just awfulness. Which is just really incredible to do in such a short amount of time.
How has he actually been successful at doing that? And can you walk us through a little bit about, because you said it loops, like, and how long do you actually take to create your vines, like actually plotting them out?
It really all depends on what you're trying to do. Some of them, the idea will pop into my head, whether I'm watching TV late at night and I see a really crappy commercial and I want to sort of do a joke on it. It'll literally just be me sitting in front of my TV, rewinding, and then just constantly like trying to get the perfect creepy loop. Whereas some things, like I did one that was inspired by Keeley Jams where
And who's Keeley Jams?
Keeley Jams is probably our generation's Bob Dylan. Bob Dylan,
bold Phyllis
Diller,
Anthony Chalea. Oh no, we'll get to you in a second, Stacey.
Well, no, he's just done some really just weird things. You can't necessarily call them comedy, although they make you laugh. It's more like just strange art pieces where he'll take a subject, whether it's Lana Del Rey or Yankee Candles or Kurt Cobain, and just exacerbate on them in a way that just is weird. Like he'll go into a Bed Bath & Beyond and fill every single frame with a picture of Lana Del Rey. Or he'll make his own scented Yankee candles, just things like that. But obviously that's not necessarily you can execute in time because you have to design things, print them out, make sure it all works correctly. So it really depends on what you're trying to do. And honestly, like sometimes you'll put a ton of time into it and you'll put it out there and people just won't really care for it. And that can kind of hurt.
That has never happened to me.
Really?
Never, ever.
Never.
All I get is love.
100% success rate, Stacey.
100% success.
I have to ask, Stacey, because your ideas, I would put it lightly, are rather raunchy.
Yeah, they're bawdy, they're raunchy.
A
they're
little
fun.
Bawdy. They're fun. They're fun. Do you consult? Do you have a partner that you consult with? Are these all from the great mind of Stacey Nightmare?
They come out of my head part. You know, I write them myself. I film them. I mean, I have
the crab part or the human part.
It's all mixed together. It's a hot mess inside there. I don't know what's what. But, you know, I do have some helpers. I have some men that I've trapped in my home that I make film my vines. I have some...
How long did it take to train these men? Were they in it from the start?
Yeah, they couldn't help but be, you know? I mean, that's the
just
way
Just mesmerized by the Stacey
yeah,
Nightmare aura.
Exactly.
Got it. As I said before, Vine is still in its early stages. Do you guys, maybe Tony, I'll turn this to you, do you see this... sort of in the golden age, as maybe we're going to get. I think a lot of people now on Twitter feel it's been sort of super saturated with now just too much noise.
Right.
Do you sort of see this age right now as just a lot of great talent, and sort of in the future maybe there's just going to be too many people trying out Vine, maybe?
No, I mean, we're already past it. The golden age is gone.
Oh, really?
The
golden age is over.
It's gone.
Maybe last month.
Yeah, everything moves so fast, and I think it's growing so fast that, like, there was a time period, I think all Viners feel it, where there was something really special that is slightly lost. But I'm less cynical about it. I do actually believe that there are new avenues for the app to explore, and I don't think – I mean – everyone said it's kind of an in-joke to say that the golden age is over, but I honestly believe that like there's more success to be had and more ideas to be explored on the app. I'm really excited about the future.
And I know this is sort of spontaneous. I wonder, do you guys maybe want a Vine in the room? What do you think?
You know, I was thinking about maybe doing a fake morning zoo crew.
Yeah,
thing,
that's a good idea.
Hey, it's 7:13 in the morning. We're here with WXYT's WDED, home of the Phrase That Pays. Today we're talking with Stacey Nightmare. Stacey,
hey,
tell us a little about your next feature film.
What's up, Zoo Crew? Stacey in the house.
No.
I have diarrhea today. Diarrhea camp.
Oh, yeah. We're gonna get to the tunage. We're going to see if we
no
can't get Stacey Nightmare.
No one is vining this. No one is vining.
This is prep. This is
yeah,
vine
this is,
prep.
I guess,
this is
the
sort
brainstorm
of the conceptual
told
before
me to
we
turn
get...
off my
yeah, we were
phone.
Told to turn off
I
our
know,
phones.
I know. This is sort of, I mean, isn't this how vines come apart? You sort of have an idea. It's sort of,
this well,
you,
is what
yeah, there's a
vine.
Lot of fart noises.
Anthony, you work
there's
in an
a lot
ad
of diarrhea.
Agency. I wonder if you actually get some ideas from the ad agency at workout. Do you actually, you know...
I mean, we try to. I work for an agency called MRY. We're a digital and social media agency. We work with a lot of big clients. But honestly, we've been pushing hard to get our clients on Vine. We're trying. But, you know, some of the brands we work with are so huge, and they tend to be more conservative and careful with their brand. And I've been trying to pitch Stacey Nightmare for a long time to be our spokes thing.
She shouldn't be such a tough sell.
Yeah, I think I should sell food. You know, me touching food, it's really appealing to people.
With your giant claws.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Beauty supplies.
Absolutely. Now, I know that you guys have organized, been a part of Vine meetups, Vine... can you talk... Tony, can you talk a little bit about that, like creating the Vine community?
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely been a part of Vine meetups. I mean... Anthony has done great things with his, like, MRY Vine-a-thons. He's been running that show for a little while. I run a page called LMPP as well, which is oriented around kind of building community within the app. And it's not oriented around people meeting each other, but it is oriented around kind of creating community around specific hashtags. And
I think Stacey is chomping at the bit to Vine right now.
I'm vining a little bit.
Oh, yeah?
She's in her natural habitat.
Oh, I vined a B-side already.
Oh,
really?
It's stealth like that.
Oh, no.
Wow. That we didn't even see you.
You
it
didn't
was
even,
underneath the table?
Yeah, it's happening right now.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, you didn't even know.
That's the thing about B-sides is that it's constantly happening even if you don't even aren't aware of
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
All right, shut up. I'm making a vine.
Here we go. Stacey Nightmare vining in studio.
I'm about to go on the air. I hope I don't embarrass myself and say something dumb. Okay.
How could you ever say anything
Hold
dumb,
on,
right? Stacey?
This is the next shot. Diarrhea! 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 Diarrhea!
What a perfect segue. Yeah, I don't know if you,
okay,
I don't know if you
perfect.
Folks. Oh, great. Great.
A plus. Put it up there.
A plus. Put it up there.
If Keeley Jams is our generation's Bob Dylan, Stacey's our generation's Patti Smith.
Mm. Rebel with the cause.
Oh yeah.
Now, do you, because like I said, the it's a very new medium. What do you guys see as the future? Who's taking this forward? What, you know, what's happening a year from now on Vine that's maybe not happening now?
That's really tough to say. You know, they obviously, because they're such a small team, they're gradually adding new features that people have been chomping at the bits for. Like now we finally have a drafts folder, which is nice, and some very basic editing. I feel like, I hope they don't go this route, but I feel like it's going to be only a matter of time before they let you upload your own videos, similar to how Instagram does it. Which I really hope. Yeah, that's
yeah.
Let's exactly
can
how
we
I
can
feel.
We talk
no
a little
way.
About Instagram video? I'm hearing some discontent in the room.
Well, the thing about Instagram, not necessarily just video, but Instagram as a platform, is that it's a completely different beast. It's not built for discovery. Like, it's got a terrible discovery function. It's got that one
true.
Little compass icon, and I click that. I get some pictures of sneakers, some pictures of One Direction, like, you know, tweens giving the duck face and all that crap. And
so good stuff.
Meals you
me.
Can't even eat.
Yeah, there you go. And honestly, like, the way that consumers use Instagram is completely different than how they're using Vine. With Vine, they are looking for content to consume, but as Instagram is a much more personal medium, they'll be seeing what their friends are doing, what their celebrities are doing, and they're not necessarily finding people through the app. They're finding it through other means, so they'll find like a famous Instagram dog, but they'll find it through whether it's like a BuzzFeed list.
All right, we're gonna have to leave it there for today. Be sure to check out the Vines you heard here today on the website, on our website, audiofilespodcast.com. That's all one word in audiofiles with an F. Tony, Stacy,
yeah,
Anthony,
diarrhea.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, man. It's been real.
Woo!
Yep, thanks.
Sorry, dude.
Laughter is universal. We all do it. Just not always at the same things or in the same way. The reasons for this aren't black and white, but the comedy clubs, they are. Marcus Hillman is a stand-up comedian in his own right, and he reports from New York City's urban rooms.
I need applauses, please. Real applauses, like clapping of hands, together, loudly. Put that energy together.
It's Sunday evening wind-down time, but the weekly Laughs on Lafayette show is crowded.
People being before, make some noise. Please make some noise.
We're at Moe's Bar in Fort Greene, Brooklyn, an area that's changed a lot over the last decade and a half. 65% black in 2000. By the 2010 census, that number was down to 47. Tonight, though, all the comedians are black, and so is most of the audience. You wouldn't see these kind of demographics at a mainstream comedy club. Industry people call this an urban show.
Basically, it comes down to an urban show is just a polite way of saying black room. There tend to be more white people in the audience in mainstream shows.
Comedian Chad Plain says the stakes are higher.
If you're going to do an urban room or a black room, you have to be funny immediately. In a mainstream show or a white room, they'll give you time to develop the joke. They might not laugh, but they won't boo you out of the room either.
And it's not just the audience. The performances sound different.
I'm walking on my block. This dude going to look me up and down talking about, damn, ma, you look good. Ain't nobody knocked you up yet?
Yeah.
Ain't nobody knocked you up yet is a pickup line, really? I wanted to say, damn boy, ain't nobody locked you up yet.
That's Nikki Sunshine. She's a comedian and a good friend of mine, and she performs on both the urban and mainstream comedy circuits. She's thought a lot about the differences.
Sometimes what I've noticed when I perform for black audiences, maybe my language is a little more relaxed or it's a vernacular that I use when I'm with black people. I liken it to worship. In black churches, we worship in a different way. And I would go even a step further and say that it has a parallel with singing and soul.
So white rooms have no soul, basically.
I don't... I didn't say that, but it's a different... language.
But does that language translate? I've been around comedy for years, and the truth is, every comic can't perform in both types of rooms. And I think that many people, maybe like some of the new residents of this neighborhood, probably wouldn't feel too comfortable in an urban show. As I'm thinking this, Laughs on Lafayette host Dave Lester spots a white guy in the audience having a snack.
I love that you are killing that chicken in front of black people. I don't know why I do. I just love the fact that you are murdering that chicken in front of us. No, baby, he's cool. He's cool.
The whole room loves it, especially the white guy, which makes me laugh at my own assumptions. Two nights later, I'm at Sweet Jane's on 106th Street in East Harlem.
Give it up for yourselves for coming out tonight, man. Clap it up. Clap it up.
It's packed, and I don't see any white people. Comedian James Davis does a killer impression of a man that brought a lot of Americans of all races together.
Now listen, I understand we're not where we want to be. But you've got to look at this government.
He thinks the comedy business should be more like the Obama campaign. It should reach out.
Both rooms need to be more proactive in integrating themselves. I feel like urban rooms need to be more proactive in bringing mainstream comics to their rooms. And I think the same goes for mainstream comedy clubs. There are certain urban comics that need to be given a chance.
Nikki Sunshine happens to be one of those comics. She performs next.
Because I realize I don't date guys, I sponsor men. Anybody else? Anybody else sponsoring a man? You over there? It's rough, isn't it? It's like that Save the Children's commercial for $20 a day. You too can date Tyrone.
It's the type of performance and crowd reaction that defines urban comedy.
Nikki, you just killed.
I don't necessarily know if it was that I killed. I just think it was a good crowd and I was feeding off the energy of the crowd. The urban room is going to give you more energy.
I wonder how Nikki would sound to a mostly white audience. Will the jokes be delivered the same way? Will the crowd laugh at the same things? The next night, I'm downtown at Greenwich Village Comedy Club. The audience is mostly tourists and the after-work crowd. I spot about three black people. Nikki Sunshine is the only non-white comedian. She delivers her set differently, even when she's telling the same joke.
I feel like it's like my dating life, it's like that Save the Children's commercial. For $20 a day, you too can date Kevin.
The pronunciation changes, and the man she's dating in the joke in Harlem is Tyrone. In Greenwich Village, he's Kevin. It reminds me of something she said the other night in Brooklyn.
Sometimes when I'm in a mainstream audience, maybe I tend to speak, you know, more standard English.
She also felt the crowd was different.
This audience is, they're a little, I feel, subdued and delayed. So the punchlines hit differently.
Nikki says whichever room she's in, she keeps in mind what's really important.
I think it's about connecting with the audience. It's not really about black or white. I believe it's really about the audience and your energy and how you, if you want to relate to them and connect to them.
She must be connecting well. She's booked weekly at Greenwich Village Comedy Club. From the West Village, I'm Marcus Hellman.
To hear more about the linguistic divide between black and white comedy, please visit our website at audiophilespodcast.com. It's hard to explain what makes something funny. It's so subjective. So we decided to take a little survey to find out what gets New Yorkers guffawing.
Something that makes me laugh is...
Let's see here. Juggalos make me laugh.
Really hard test that I do bad at.
People falling down.
People like fall down stairs or like trip, like not seriously hurt themselves.
I fell on the train.
Like the act of somebody actually tripping is hilarious.
Because like everybody was looking at me, yeah, and it's embarrassing, so all you can do is laugh.
Or like if somebody's squatting down and you push them over, that's the funniest thing in the world.
I'm laughing about it right now, but I didn't even see it, but that's the funny stuff.
Fart noises.
Fart noises.
Still. Yep.
They never get old.
My friends.
You see how that works? She makes me laugh.
They're funny. In a yoga class, they're hilarious, you know?
Tragic hot messes make me laugh.
My own snort when I laugh really hard.
They never. The wind removing clothes.
I think babies on trains, like when they make hilarious faces, is really funny.
My name is Elliot. And this is my joke.
How do you make a tissue dance?
How?
Put a little boogie in it.
That segment was produced by our reporters Ronald Chavez, Mary Eileen Croak, and some giggling 5 and 6 year olds, apparently. Thanks so much for bearing with us. Sorry, had to do it. After a quick break, we'll be back with puns from Brooklyn and parody, country western style. Stay tuned.
Only in the forest can you see this. And this. And this. But nothing beats the moment you see that.
Cool!
That's your child's eyes opening up to a world of possibilities.
I didn't know it could do that!
Because one trip to the forest can spark a world of difference.
There are some moments only the forest can inspire. Find yours at discovertheforest.org. Learn about forests near you and discover cool things to do when you go, like hiking, canoeing, fishing, or camping. Or create your own adventure with family and friends, and you might just see this. Your moment's out there. Find it at discovertheforest.org. That's discovertheforest.org.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
I like that it's an international mecca. People from all over the world come here, and they get the photo op of the guitar player at Grand Central Station, so I'm a bit of a tourist attraction. I am Robert Maximus Bridgewell, and you're listening to Audio Files.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Alex Eidman, and you're listening to Audio Files. Today, we're just kidding. Remember the joke about the chicken crossing the road? Not funny, right? But what if you called it poultry in motion? Still groaning? Well, puns are tough to pull off. Wordplay usually ranks as one of the most mocked forms of comedy because, as hard as they are to come up with, they're also kind of awful. But as Latima Stevens reports, this malign double entendre is collecting a devoted following in, where else? Brooklyn.
Fred Firestone is getting the crowd ready for the competition.
Everybody here for the Punderdome!
Firestone is a self-proclaimed Rodney Dangerfield impersonator. He takes on the character for the night and starts the competition with a call and response.
If you lose your hearing, it is ear... Who said replaceable first? Where I heard it.
Fred and his daughter, Jo Firestone, started the Punderdome in May 2011 with about 40 people in the audience. Today, roughly 400 pun lovers are gathered in an old warehouse with a bar countertop made of old bowling alley lanes, waiting to see who can dish up the best wordplay. Punnery at its eye-rolling best. Competitors have names like Punky Brewster, Punda Express, and Paul Punyon.
Alrighty, we're to start with Pun DMC.
The topic for this round is countries.
Thank you for the applause. I feel like I have a new zeal and some fervor for continuing right now.
Like that. So there are three rounds. Each round has a theme like comfort foods or Tom Hanks movies. The punters get 90 seconds to prepare and 2 minutes to deliver their mini masterpieces to the crowd.
Okay, the topic for this round is going to be fabrics, or what's your sweater made out of?
So, it's an honor to be up here with this distinguished flannel. I just hope that I can keep you all in stitches tonight.
Puns generally don't leave anyone in stitches. Most puns leave people groaning at how terrible they are. Despite this, punters get on that stage every month yearning to wow the crowd. Take George Punstanza. He has to pun about comfort foods.
Surprise, surprise. Back in the day, I was a player. Back in the Idaho potatoes.
What is a surprise is that Punstanza, who actually resembles George Costanza from Seinfeld, has competed in the Punter Dome 15 times and has never won.
I just never win that much or at all. I mean, I've come close, but I've never actually made it to the final two. But it could happen.
George Costanza's evening ended at round one, but Punky Brewster held on. She's a past champ and explains what it's like to woo the crowd with clever puns and take home a pun trophy.
Because I am just very earnestly trying my hardest. Like, I know some of them will land unexpectedly, and I'm willing to take the good and the bad just to kind of get better. When you're put under the pressure to do puns, you can come up with more than you think. I knew far more Tom Hanks movies than I thought, including Captain Phillips.
Tonight it was politics that did her in.
Boy, I hope I have a good enough constitution to do this. Because I don't know if you know this, but we are not commissioned to be up here.
The topic for round three was the gridlock in Washington. That just happens to be an area of expertise for the night's champion, Punda Express.
The one thing the government shutdown doesn't affect is that my mother takes care of my most prized wind instrument. So no matter what happens with the shutdown, Obamacare is still here.
After winning tonight, Punda can compete to be a punslinger in the annual O. Henry World Pun-Off Championships in Austin, Texas in May. But tonight, he wins bragging rights as the most puntastic punner until next month.
Thank you guys for coming to Punderdome.
First Tuesday of the month. Who's coming back?
To this crowd, a pun is its own reword. Sorry, I had to try out at least one pun myself, right? Anyway, in Brooklyn, I'm Latima Stevens.
They call me the hip-hop-opotamus. Flows that glow like phosphorus. Popping off the top of this esophagus. Rocking this metropolis. I'm not a large water-dwelling mammal. Where did you get that preposterous hypothesis? Did Steve tell you that perchance? Steve.
For more info about the 2014 O. Henry Pun-Off Championships in Austin, Texas, check out our website at audiofilespodcast.com. Patsy Cline, Loretta Lynn, and Dolly Parton are all country singers who sang stereotypical songs about heartbreakers and lost love. Brooklyn-based comedy country duo The Reformed Whores grew up with those influences, although you'll probably never see them play at the Grand Ole Opry. The Reformed Whores, made up of Marie Cecile Anderson and Katie Frame, still sing about love, with a healthy dose of sarcasm and plenty of lines we can't mention on this show. The Reformed Whores join us in the studio now. Marie, Katie, nice to have you.
Howdy! Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks.
Do you guys mind starting us off with a song?
But certainly. Well, as y'all heard, we are Reformed Whores.
That's right. Yes, that's also the name of our band. Yeah.
And we'd like to thank you again for having us here. This is really a fancy, fancy studio.
Oh, it's very nice here. I gotta say, it sure beats performing at a Motel 6, if you know what I mean. Well, you know, it is really quite a pleasure to be here. And I gotta say, I'm feeling really good today. Yeah. Are you feeling good, Marie?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. No, I'm not. I'm not feeling so good, y'all. I'm a little hungover.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes.
I went out drinking last night at the Union Hall in Brooklyn. I got pretty wasted. But I met a man.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Wait a minute. I'm sorry. But wait, Marie, you didn't...
Katie, no. I would never do that. Oh. No, but I did do them in the bathroom.
Oh, well, that's good. Thank goodness.
No, I didn't do what you're talking about.
Oh, yes, I was worried. Because there is one thing that we think is the worst thing you can do when you've been drinking, and it's this.
When I was a little girl, my daddy told me, Kate, if you want to catch a man, you got to give him lots of space. Play it cool and be a flirt, but just make sure you think. And don't pick up the telephone when you had too much to drink. Don't drunk and dial when you come home late. Don't call him an uninebriated state. Don't text him with a booty call. Don't call to say, oh, my gosh, Jeremy, how are you doing? Hi. I just wanted to tell you I had so much fun and nerdy tonight. You know, I just thought I'd give you a call. Okay, anyway, you want to give me a call back? We'll talk to you. Okay, bye-bye. Just don't do that. It's a bad idea. Just reel a man real slow and nice and give some time to your man. And pretty soon, I guarantee you'll have meeting from the palm of your hand. But if after a beer or two you call the guy you just met, watch out, girl, cause I'm pretty sure you're gonna say something you'll regret. Don't drunk and dial when you come home late. Don't call him an uninebriated state. Don't text him with a booty call. Don't call and say, Andy! Andy! Where are you? I'm here in your house. And you're not here. Why? Why don't you call me back? Oh, wait! Ha! Never mind. I'll just see you when you get home. Just don't. Please don't do that. Not tonight. If you get the urge to type those 10 little numbers in your cupidazzled BlackBerry, just remember it's a sin. Bother folks real late at night when you're three sheets to the wind. So put down the phone and back away when you're drinking from a bottle of gin. Don't drunk and dial when you come home late. Don't call him an uninebriated state. Don't text him with a booty call. Don't call and say,
do you want to know something? I don't ever think about you ever. No, I don't. But I just want to tell you that if you want to come over and maybe we could just relive some old times on the washing machine, you know what I mean? Just give me a call. We'll talk soon. Okay, Big Daddy. Bye.
Just don't drunk and dial when you come home late. Don't call him an uninebriated say. Don't text him with a booty call. Just don't.
Woo! Oh, yeah.
Thank you very much. That is the Reformed Whores live in studio. Katie Frame on accordion.
Yes.
And Marie Cecile Anderson on vocals.
Yeah.
Now I have to ask, does that song come from an actual experience?
From drunk dialing. Well, Katie Frame here drunk dialed her dad.
Yeah, I did.
It let's hear about that.
It was the most mortifying thing I've ever done in my entire life. Got a call from somebody, and it was confusing, and I was drunk, and I called my dad at, 5 in the morning or something, and I thought he was calling me, and I didn't know who he was, and I was like, who is this? Hey, David, how are you doing? And he was like, this is your father. I was like, oh, my God.
Wrong yeah. David.
Yeah, wrong person.
So our dad came over, and no, just kidding. We're not in Tennessee.
That's for a different show, yeah.
Yeah, just kidding.
So you guys have been playing and touring together for 3 years.
Yeah.
How did you start out? How'd you meet?
We met at a party in Brooklyn.
Like every great
every
musical
band
duo
starts.
Oh yes.
Where are you guys from?
I'm from Nashville, Tennessee.
And I, Katie, am from Maryland.
And, yeah, so you guys met at a party. And
yeah, we both had a mutual friend who was having a birthday party, and so we went to this party not knowing anybody else. I actually almost didn't go to this party because I was driving back from upstate.
But fate intervened.
But fate was like, Marie, you got to get yourself to this party, girl. Something magical is going to happen. So I went and didn't know anybody except the birthday girl, but then Katie and I ended up talking all night long over the appetizer table. We just kept, mm-hmm. we pretty much ate everything at the party and didn't share. But we, then by the end, had said, you know, she said, I play the accordion. And I was like, I play the ukulele. We should start a band. And she was like, yes, we will. And then she came over to my house the following weekend.
And I think I scared her a little, but I did come over.
Yeah.
So tell me about what your first show was like, or the honeymoon phase, as they say.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Marie, unbeknownst to me, had arranged some show that we were going to play. Like, we didn't even know what we were doing yet. And she's like, I got us a show. And I was like, we don't have anything to do for that show. But it was good she did that because it really lit a fire under her butts and we got a lot of stuff going and set up. And the show went really well, surprisingly.
Where was it?
It was at, the old UCB theater, which is now,
I think it's or parking lot.
It's, yeah, it's, a condemned parking lot or something now. Or it's, an empty shell of itself. But it was still a pretty good show. So
okay. We booked, two shows from that show.
Yeah.
Really?
So, yeah. Snowball effect.
And, you know, because you guys sing sort of country western, I hear a lot of different stuff. What did you guys grow up listening to? Katie, let's start with you.
I mean, I listened to a lot of all sorts of different kinds of music. My dad lives into, 70s rock stuff or whatever. But then in addition to that, I felt this weird connection to, folk music and, back porch, folk
kind of stuff.
Like Appalachian?
Yeah, like yeah, definitely, like some connections to that. And started to fall in love with some of that old country. And then beyond that, people like June Carter and Dolly Parton, of course, was always like a favorite of, as a kid. Mm-hmm.
And Marie, how did you guys actually decide on the style that you guys do?
I think it just happened pretty organically. We both just naturally, I guess, write in that way, or I don't know. It just, it always sounded a little twangy, and we just kind of went with that.
And yeah. In terms of the acting, in terms of the parts, had you guys done that before?
Yeah, we're both actors and trained actors, and that's why we, you know, have been living in New York City to make it as actors. And that was the one thing that we were really talking about, that party, was just like, oh, God, being an actor in New York, it's so tricky, it's so hard.
So this was like kind of a perfect marriage of acting and music.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
So can we hear another song?
Well, but of course, but we have a little surprise.
Oh, great.
Actually, I just want to let you know that we brought our entourage today.
Oh,
here
yeah.
she is.
Oh, it's a baby for you folks at home.
It's a little baby.
We brought a little baby.
It's an entourage.
It's so cute. Mm-hmm. Because we want to sing a little lullaby to our little baby,
oh,
if that's
yes.
all right.
Yes.
Let me just swing this microphone
around. Oh, I think
around.
That's a wonderful idea.
Y'all can know what's happening at home.
Mm-hmm.
You're listening to the Reformed Horrors live in studio on Audiophiles.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So let's just sing a little lullaby to our little baby friend over there.
Okay.
It's about one of our favorite things. Every morning at 10 in the morning, my cell phone rings. Every morning at 10 in the morning, my cell phone sings. Time to take my birth control. Time to take my birth control. Cause I love you, baby, but I don't remember those. Take my birth control. I know you make a really great dad, but you're probably really, really mad. If I didn't take my birth control, yeah. Didn't take my birth control. Cause you love my baby, but you don't want my baby to always take my birth control. I know the pill makes me fat. With a baby, I'd be twice the size of that. So I always take my birth control, yeah. Always take my birth control. Cause I love my body, baby, you'd be bigger with a baby, so I always take my birth control. I can barely make my rent. With a baby, I'd move to a 10. So I always take my birth control. Yeah. Always take my birth control. Cause I don't want a baby that'd ruin my life. So I always take my birth control.
Oh, yeah. Very nice. You're listening to the Reformed Horrors live in studio. Marie Cecile Anderson on ukulele.
Yeah.
And Katie Frame on baby shaker and vocals.
Oh, yes. For you folks at home, that little cute little baby of ours turned into a little maraca type thing.
Well, you know, you got to get creative sometimes.
That's right.
So you guys just got off a tour with Les Claypool.
Yeah.
And Primus.
Yeah.
That is an interesting combination.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's.
We got email and was like, what?
And so he reached out to you?
Well, not him personally. It's kind of a more dry story than that. The agents and all that stuff happened. But our agent sent us an email saying, you know, Les would actually like you Reformed Whores to open for him.
And were you guys fans of Les?
We definitely knew Primus and were very excited about that.
So how was the tour?
Amazing. It's been great. We've been on and off the tour since March, so it's been kind of a continuous thing. And he's may go out on another leg at some point, and the group Duo De Twang, which is who we were touring with, was one of his side projects. They their new album's coming out soon too.
Yeah, so January.
That'll be
we
fun.
Think.
Yeah,
4 Foot
so you
Shack.
Can see what we've been doing with these people.
Yeah,
and have you been working on new material while you're on tour?
We've definitely been inspired by things that have happened on tour.
Yeah, anything in particular that can be relayed on the show?
We probably need like a driving song.
Oh, yeah, it would be good to have a driving song.
Yeah.
I think it's just going to go like, driving, 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 never stop. Yeah, driving, driving, driving. There I wrote it and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, wow, that's a good one.
Yeah,
oh, man.
For our next album.
I like that. I'm glad that I can even provide the littlest hint of inspiration
for
a future Reformed Horse song. Now, I know that you guys released a song in response to Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah.
And I know he accused a birth control advocate, Sandra Fluke, of being a slut. I want to play a little clip of that.
Yeah.
There was a word when we were kids that wasn't very nice. It was reserved for certain girls who'd been round the block once or twice. But listen, y'all, we got news that will blow your mind. Thanks to Mr. Limbaugh, that word's been redefined.
So apparently now...
So, what's the word?
About that.
The word's been redefined.
Oh, the word is slut, and we are all sluts now. Y'all, you're a slut. She's a slut.
Oh, I'm honorary or real?
Oh, real. If you're an intelligent, well-spoken, smart individual, then you are a slut now.
Can you guys, I actually want to get into this a little bit because, you know, the slut shaming, and this is sort of, it's a big topic of conversation in the news. How did you guys think about forming a response and sort of what are your thoughts?
Well, Katie
on
got very, very angry once this Rush Limbaugh thing
came. Yeah, it came out and he, you know, I think he was very irresponsible with his reaction to what she was doing. Mm-hmm. And I just felt like here's the other thing about it is we had an opportunity as a band that writes our own music to say something about it, which is really exciting as like a individual. And I think just it just kind of flew out of us or whatever. And then
Katie called me on the upper, you were like walking down the street
on the upper west side.
And she calls me, and I'm actually moving at the time. So I'm like carrying boxes and stuff. And Katie's called me like 3 times or something. I'm like, something's wrong. I really need to answer. So then I answer, and I'm like, Katie, what's going on? She's like, I'm a slut.
I'm singing
that a
the
good
song,
chorus? Like, that's a good chorus. Slut. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And
we're getting a little peek inside the creative writing. Collaboration.
She's like, I'm sorry, it just
chorus.
Hit me. We have to do something, Marie. So it was from there. That's how it started. We went over, and one day we finished the song and filmed the video. And that same
and it
day,
went, and it went viral, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it definitely went a little viral. And we got to play.
This
at
is
a,
cool.
We got to play at a women's march in Washington D.C. and we played right on the Capitol in front of the Capitol, and we just sang
in front of the mall. So
yeah, sang into the mall like over all.
Yeah,
of our songs
in front of thousands.
Oh, wow.
Of people.
In front of thousands of people.
Yeah, there was a lot of people there. So
that's
that
amazing.
Was really cool.
Now, sort of on this topic, Miley Cyrus has sort of been in the news a lot. And I'm really interested to hear sort of your take on
Miley.
Her VMA performance, just her in general, people's reactions to her.
Well, first things first, we have to – I'm just going to be completely honest.
Sure. That's
I love her album.
Oh, yeah. We have a lot of fun.
Musically, I
really like her album. As a performer, her VMA performance – one thing I really think people should go do is watch Madonna's VMA performance of the year. There's the Vogue, and then the year before that, she does something else. And it's just her performance she's a performer. She's a true artist and a performer with a voice, and you feel empowered by watching Madonna. Then cut to Miley Cyrus's performance. I was not inspired. I was not empowered as a woman. I felt bad for her and embarrassed.
I have one thing to add, too. She's like 20 or something. And when I was 20, I was going through crazy stuff like I'm sure she's going through. But she's doing it in a public forum, too, which is really hard. So I think that there's a lot of so many levels to what's going on with her. But
yeah, she's a role model. A lot of girls are actually looking up to her. And
that's problematic and that's like in some ways.
Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you guys have time for one more song?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Oh, but it's a dirty one.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. We got a dirty song, y'all. Mm-hmm. And I know it's the radio, but we're going to be careful here.
Oh, yeah.
We got a song about something that everybody does.
Oh, yeah. I know all you listeners, you do it. I know you don't talk about it, but you do it.
Some of y'all might be doing it right now.
Oh, yeah. If you're lucky, you're doing it right now. Yeah. Okay. Here we go.
There seems to be a common misconception around the subject of a lady's rectum. Some people say that girls don't defecate.
But we're here to tell you that that ain't true. Girls do indeed go number two. Yep, you heard us right. Girls poop too.
Girls poop too. This message is long overdue. Ever said we don't ain't got a clue. Girls poop too, don't be scared, it's natural, tain't taboo, and a fact, it's true that girls poop too.
Some girls try to hold it in, others blame their stink on friends, and some just sneak away to unload.
But one way or another, brother, a girl has got to drop that mother, 'cause Lord knows if she didn't, she'd explode.
Girls poop too. We hate to break the news to you, but that and there ain't no chocolate fondue. Girls poop too. We cook up a main poop stew, and a fact's a fact, it's true, the girls poop too.
Break it down for them, Marie.
Take it, Katie. Nice one.
Oh, thank you.
So ladies, stand up and be proud. If he walks into your fart cloud, just look him in the eye and say, yeah, that was me.
Drop those kids off at the pool. Make a log, build a stool. Just be glad we don't go number three.
What's that?
I don't know.
Girls poop too. We do what we gotta do. Do tootin' toots with our butt kazoo. Girls poop too. A brown canoe is coming through. And a fact's a fact, it's true, the girls poop too. A fact's a fact, it's true, that girls poop too.
Very nice. The Reformed Whores live in studio.
Yes,
Katie Frame on guitar.
Yes.
Marie Cecile Anderson on vocals. We're about out of time, but
yeah.
What's on deck for you guys? What's coming up?
Well, actually, we've been we're semifinalists for the Andy Kaufman Award, so we have a big show.
That sounds prestigious.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Reggie Watts has won. Kristen Schaal has won in the past. We have that show on Sunday night at Gotham Comedy Club.
Mm-hmm. We're working on a new music video tomorrow.
Yeah.
It should be coming out in a couple weeks
for
so
the birth
keep
control
your eyes
song
open.
That you just
yeah.
heard. But also, we really encourage people to visit our website and buy our debut album, Ladies Don't Spit.
Mm-hmm. And we're on Twitter and Facebook and all those wonderful things, just as Reformed Whores.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having
yeah.
us.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being in the studio. Marie Cecile Anderson, Katie Frame, thank you for joining Audiophiles.
Yeah.
And you all out there can catch the Reformed Whores live in person on December 18th at the Grand Victory in Williamsburg.
Singing high up the yoke. There are douchebags wherever you go. Singing.
You've been listening to Audiophiles. This show was produced by Kathleen Culleton. Tiffany Kamhai is our assistant producer, and Ronald Chavez is our online producer. Our engineer is Chad Bernhard. I'm Alex Eidman, and thanks for listening.
Are you thinking about getting your GED diploma? Well, here at the GED Pep Talk Center, we've got a number of pep talks that can motivate you.
Sometimes things don't always turn out the way you want them to.
You know that feeling? People look at you and don't believe in you.
You want some gentle encouragement. Then you're on your way to your GED diploma and a better life.
But I know, you're probably just a little bit nervous.
You can find it in yourself to take that first step.
You can improve your future.
You can do this. I know you can.
You need to start pushing yourself.
Now get your game face on and take the first step towards a better life.
Hurry up. Don't make me repeat myself.
Whatever level of motivation you need to get your GED diploma, we've got a pep talk that's right for you. Call 1-877-38-YOUR-GED or visit yourged.org for your pep talk and find free GED classes in your area. GED is a registered trademark of the American Council on Education, brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.